Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. I'm Genuinely Grace. I hope you're well, whatever's going on for you. My goodness, there's a lot going on at the moment. But I do get the sense that spring might finally be coming. I swear I saw a couple of daffodils, which is always lifts your spirits a little bit, doesn't it? We had such a fun time on the auspicious date last Tuesday, the 22nd of the 2nd, 2022. And in fact, we did a meditation, a last-minute meditation with some Sober Club members at 22:02 we started. so we were still doing our lovely little meditation at 22:22 on the 22nd of the 2nd, 22. So all the twos, it felt very, 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 I don't know, kind of lots of energy around it. It was really felt like an auspicious kind of date. So I hope you enjoyed that moment, which apparently we won't see again in our lifetime, that, you know, that configuration of numbers. Of course, if you follow numerology, you'll know that, you know, it was a master number. 22 is a master number, and it's the architect of change, effectively. So, yeah, well, let's hope so, right? What else is going on? Yeah, it was very interesting, actually, because after that session, one Sober Club member posted something really lovely in our private group, said something very nice about me, and I said, thank you. And then in a kind of moment of weakness, I shared a couple of things that were going on for me, so I was feeling a little bit down. And then another member wrote this lovely post saying, oh, let's love bomb Janie. It's something we do in the Sober Club. We like giving people love bombs and cheering them up, but I don't think it ever happened to me before, and it was really interesting, and I really noticed how I felt when there were lots and lots of messages saying really lovely things about me and how I literally kind of transformed their life, and just really lovely messages. Now, you'd think that I would be sitting there reading this and it would so warm my heart, and I'd be like shouting my family and like, oh, come and look at this, print it out. But actually, I noticed afterwards that the feeling I got was, it was really odd. I felt really uncomfortable. And I mean, I was grateful. Of course I was. It's amazing to see people say lovely things about you. But basically, I recognised after a little bit of digging, as it were, that the feeling was that I wasn't deserving of those messages. It's funny, isn't it? They do say that you teach what you need to learn. And I'm certainly queen of convincing other people that, you know, you are enough, right? You are enough. And absolutely. In fact, one of the things we spoke about on our meditation evening was this concept of being expecting to receive miracles, expecting good things to happen, and being willing to accept, expect to receive and be willing to accept. And in that moment, I suddenly could see that I had seen myself as a giver, if you like, but really not very good at receiving. It was such a eye-opening moment, really. Still, you know, lots of layers to unwrap, as you know. It's never just about ditching the booze, that's for sure. It's always all the other layers that we've got to uncover. And, you know, self-love, self-acceptance, knowing that you're deserving. It's all got so many nuances, hasn't it, really? All of that stuff, which brings me beautifully to my guest this week, Katie Lipps, who I came across her book and I thought, now that's an intriguing title, Love Yourself, Lose Weight. I thought, now that's intriguing. And of course, you know, we know that book titles have to be sort of out there and very shouty and you know, attention grabbing. Clickbait almost in some cases with some books. I always remember Jason Vail getting really fed up that one of his early books, he wanted to call it something along the lines of, you know, get healthy holistically, you know, with juices. It wasn't that, but, you know, it was the holistic picture. But the publisher said, no, we have to call it lose seven pounds in seven days. But you just have to go with this stuff. Anyway, the title did grab my attention. And I thought, you know, I'd really be interested to know what's behind all of this. And of course, it is exactly as we have just been talking about, this concept of, you know, actually, before you can really do much about things like weight loss and, you know, other behaviour changes and just changes really in your life, the accepting yourself piece has to come first. It really does. And most people, when we're drinking, find that really hard. I did meet somebody the other day who is still drinking and manages to do 20 minutes meditation morning and evening. Wow, I was very impressed. I certainly couldn't do that. I couldn't sit for 5 minutes when I was drinking because a little voice would say, "Ooh, this is not quite right. This is not authentic with who you are." But yeah, there you go. We're all different, right? And then we're all at a different stage of our journey. Hate that expression, but you know exactly what I mean. Anyway, so I thought it'd be really interesting to interview Katie and hear a bit about her story. And of course, there are many layers to this. So it is one of those titles that initially, you know, you'll be thinking, don't be ridiculous. How stupid is that, that something physical could come about, that something as physical as needing to actually drop pounds from your body could come about because of an emotional state. But of course, we do know that pretty much everything has that emotional root. So I think you'll find this really, really interesting chat. Just a quick reminder before I run the interview with Katie that we have some events coming up. We have our Family Constellations event, again, all very linked to all the stuff I've just been talking about. It's Sunday, 27th of March. It's in Hertfordshire. It's difficult to describe family constellations. You just kind of have to trust. And one of our members today was saying that she did the constellation session with us a month ago and around her family. And still little ripples appear, weeks later, you see a photograph or you hear something about a family member and you recognise that your whole perception has changed and that's impacting on how you carry out your daily life and how you react and how you are as a parent and how you are as a partner and how you are as a friend, everything. And of course, how you feel about yourself. It massively impacts. So if this is something that interests you, have a look. Go to thesoberclub.com, click on events and it's Family Constellations. I'm working with a leading expert who's been doing this stuff for 30 years. So you are in very safe hands. And it's very powerful work. It's just one day, but, you know, you'll come away feeling more open-hearted and with more compassion. And it is amazing. So anyways, check that out, please. And also we're doing some more Sober by the Sea events. And as you know, I've mentioned it a couple of times, if you are a coach or a therapist or an expert or someone who wants to really deep dive into personal transformation, then I'm doing some sober coach training. I've got a very small group of people and I've already got a bunch signed up. But if that resonates with you, I'm just a really big believer that the right people find the work, you know, at the right time. So if that is something that's of interest to you, the in-person training part is 23rd and 24th of April. It is possible to do it online, but really the connection is pretty important, followed by some online stuff, followed by ongoing support, and it's biz training as well. It's not just the sober coaching. So anyways, drop me a message if that's of interest and we can have a conversation. But yeah, Sober by the Sea coming up, Family Constellations. Some of us are at Champneys this weekend. I don't know when you're listening to this podcast, but there's another Champneys. I think it's 9th of April as well. That's in Tring. I would love to arrange more meetups around the UK. I'm really conscious that this is very southeast centric at the moment and really need to branch out and do some meetups in other areas. It's really become apparent to me just how much people want that connection. It's super important to have that connection. And if you are just starting out in all of this, if you're in the early stages of ditching the booze, absolutely get connected. I know you've heard me say it before, but I can't tell you how important it is. The number of people who leave the Sober Club and then they'll kind of message me or they'll ask if they can come back and they'll just say, I don't know what happened. I thought that I got this. You know, I was 6 weeks sober, or I was 3 months sober, and I thought that I got this. And now, however many months on, you know, either they've gone back to drinking or something else has happened in their life. And they realise they just need that accountability, and they need the support and the inspiration. And there's something really special about being around people who have been there, done it, got the T-shirt, and are striving for the next thing and the next thing. And I don't mean that in a grabbing way. I just mean literally uncovering, unwrapping what else is there for you, you know, to live your best life. So much of what we do is about self-care and optimum health and well-being. And it really doesn't matter if you're day one or, you know, year seven, there's always more to do, as I've found out this week. You know, it kind of really hit me when I realised just how unwilling I was, unable to actually receive heartfelt compliments. I really couldn't receive. I couldn't take that. You know, immediately my thought was, oh, well, they didn't really mean it. They kind of feel pressured to have to say that. So yeah, isn't that interesting? Just kind of these limiting beliefs go back so deep, so deep. It's really fascinating. But you know, we can start to chip away at them, and that's the work that we're doing. So anyways, enjoy the interview. My guest is Katie Lipps, and the book is called Love Yourself and Lose Weight, The Success Story of Self-Love. Well, I just love everything about this, Katie. Welcome.
Thanks, Janie. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm so thrilled you decided to come on the show. I mean, this is a topic that I have been talking about sort of off and on, and kind of underpinning a whole bunch of other stuff for years, really, literally for years. And it's only in more recent years that it's made more sense to me personally. But I don't think I've ever actually seen a book with this title, or, you know, this literally just talking specifically about how these two things link. So, you know, well done you for getting it out there. So let's back up and tell me a bit about you. Tell me a bit about your story.
Right. So I wrote the book. I started writing the book a couple of years ago, and it's taken me a little while to write. But it's really the story started quite a long time before then. So I was somebody who in my 20s and 30s was overweight and obese for much of that time. And I was really miserable about it. I was unhappy, and I struggled to lose weight. I tried a lot of things. I thought I was trying the right things, like eating less food, exercising more, all of that good stuff, stuff that we all know should work, but stuff that we all also know is quite hard and often doesn't give people the results that they want because they find it too hard. And I felt...
Can you just come a little close to your mic? Sorry, Katie, I'm losing you a little bit there. Carry on.
So I was definitely one of those people who found it hard to lose weight. And so I realized that I needed a different approach if I was ever going to shift the weight and make a change in my life. Mm. And at the age of 38, I had my daughter, and I was at my heaviest that I'd ever been. I weighed 17 stone, which is a lot for me. I'm 5'6". I'm not particularly tall. And I just really felt miserable being that weight. And so I knew that I needed a change, and I knew that the change had to be something different. So partly because I'd had my daughter, I felt this overwhelming sense that parents have, you know, of love for their child. And that really made a change in me. It sort of changed me as a person, as I became a mother, but it also enabled me to focus on love and on looking after not just my baby at the time, but on looking after myself. I wanted to be there for my child. And so I started reading about self-love because I'd heard about it. It was this thing that didn't mean anything to me in my life prior to that. You know, I didn't necessarily feel self-love for myself. It wasn't something that I talked about or that any of my friends particularly talked about. It wasn't part of my day-to-day or the culture that I was in. So I started reading and learning about it, and it really resonated with me. And it was this idea that, you know, I think everybody takes something slightly differently from the term self-love. But for me, I took it to mean You have to accept yourself as you are today, whilst also being able to show up for yourself and make the change that you want to change, or to give yourself the life that you want to give yourself, that you desire. And so I found that message very powerful. And I thought, well, okay, I'm going to use some of these principles to try and shift the weight. And so I looked, you know, I looked into myself, I looked at my whys. Why do I want to lose weight? Not just because I wanted to look all right in a swimsuit. You know, it's much, much less superficial than that, and much more about being there for me, being there for my daughter, my husband, my wider family, and just living the best life that I could live, really, as opposed to having this sense of regret that I always had. So I started thinking about self-love, about myself, about caring for myself, and that enabled me to lose weight. Now, I never thought I could lose 85 pounds, which is 6 stones. I thought maybe I could lose a stone or something like that. And then I lost a stone. I thought, well, this is great. This is amazing. Maybe I could lose another one. So I did. And, you know, I counted the pounds, and months went on, and I realized I was 35 pounds down. I thought I could lose 50 pounds. That would be utterly amazing for me, something I never thought I could do. And I just carried on for the focus on me and on putting myself first for me. I don't mean putting other people last, but I mean putting myself first for me. And of course, that involved eating right, moving more. Of course, it involved those things. But it wasn't about being on a diet or an exercise regime. It was about just focusing on treating myself well. And so I actually found it quite enjoyable. And as I passed the 50 pound mark, I thought, well, this is amazing. I can just keep going. And so I did. And I kept going until I stopped being obese. I stopped being overweight. And I achieved, you know, the healthy weight goal, which I never, ever thought I could do, because I'd been overweight or obese pretty much the whole of my 30s and for a lot of my 20s. So it was this transformation. It was a journey. It was quite a long journey, but it was quite an enjoyable one. And I learned a lot about myself in the process. So I decided more recently, so I lost the weight several years ago and mainly kept it off. I do talk in the book about little bumps here and there with that, but mainly kept it off. And so I decided to write a book about it, because I thought, I know that when I was overweight, when I was heavy, I didn't want to be. And I know that there are a lot of other people in a similar position to me who also are looking for a way to do this, where just focusing on what you eat, or a diet book with recipes in it, or an exercise plan that's hard, where those things fail people. And I believe that there's something in this different approach, which is a focus on self-love.
Yeah, I love it. And I mean, there's so many things we can unpick here. I think, you know, in the book, you talk about how when you were still carrying the weight, you used to tell yourself all kinds of nonsense. You know, your unconscious mind, you would sort of talk to yourself and say, well, I don't really care how I look anyway, you know, I'm not in control of how I look, it doesn't matter, you know, all of those things. You're absolutely right. We absolutely sabotage ourselves. And when people are on diets, that's exactly what they do. They'll start all great guns on a diet, and then something will upset them, or their mood will change. And then it'll be a case of, well, who gives a toss anyway? And I'll have 55 Jaffa cakes or whatever it might be. We'll tell ourselves we don't care. It's exactly the same when people ditch the booze, by the way. Exactly the same thing is going on. So I suppose if there is a question, it's just a comment really, but there is this huge link that we've created between feeling okay and eating something, consuming something, eating or drinking. It's quite bizarre really how it's evolved over years, isn't it? That this, you know, that if you're not feeling great, okay, we'll stuff something in and it will make you feel better. What is all that about?
Yeah, and good question. And I think for different people, it's slightly different things. It's not necessarily the same for everyone. For me, I use food as a comfort. But it was also a tormentor. So, you know, that cycle of, oh, I'm feeling rubbish about myself, so I'm going to have not one, but two or more chocolate bars.
Because it just doesn't matter, because who cares what I look like or feel like. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And then you feel worse, and then, then the cycle goes. And I used to drink a fair amount as well, so that contributed to it. You know, I, in my earlier career, part of the culture in the workplace is to go out drinking, go out boozing with your colleagues after work. And so it's normal to go out basically binge drinking three nights a week. And my body couldn't take it. I mean, my metabolism just was such that A, the alcohol made me put on weight, but B, the carbs that I used to have to stuff my face with to mop up.
Yeah, exactly. When you get the munchies after drinking.
It was probably much worse calorie wise than the alcohol itself. And I found myself eating to compensate for the drinking and then eating to compensate for the eating. And it just sort of spiraled from there. But I definitely felt there's a sense of comfort from food. And I had to learn that food isn't there for that. Food is there to sustain us in a healthy way. And it is possible to change that relationship. So instead of it being like a bad thing that you do because it's comforting, but you know it's not very good for you, I've learned to eat different foods, eat them in different ways, treat food with more respect, eat food that sort of looks nice, makes you feel nice, rather than...
But I think even the word food is an interesting one here, isn't it? Because, of course, we all know that the produce that we stuff in when we're feeling like that, or the alcohol that we consume, has no nutrient value anyway. And, you know, one could argue it isn't even food. You know, the ultra processed foods that we shovel in, they aren't even really food. They're designed to be addictive. You know, I've done quite a few interviews with Dr. Bumi Abu Abba, who is a food addiction coach. And, you know, she talks about, you know, ultra processed foods, which are, they're just a collection of chemicals designed to make us feel that sense of reward and pleasure. Exactly with alcohol, it's designed to be addictive. That's what it is. You know, it's an addictive substance. So the really interesting piece, of course, here is that, and of course food encompasses it all, but it isn't really. But often it's not that when we're feeling miserable we crave a fabulous rainbow salad. We don't crave that, do we? that's where the issue lies, isn't it, really? That over the years there is so much more absolute crap available to us, cheap, always there, always, you know, that promise from all the advertising, exactly the same as the alcohol. It's absolutely rife in our culture that we are given that link between pleasure and crap food.
Yeah, you're right. And of course, no one's advertising salmon.
Yeah, exactly. Apples.
Or apples. You know, we're not bombarded with endless ads about those foods. So, and also, you know, advertisers, they know that we'll go for unhealthy things, even though we know they're unhealthy, and even using them in the messaging that it's a bit bad for you, so that you're kind of in on the joke somehow. We've all normalized this idea that we eat, that it's okay to sort of stuff our faces with this non-food, as you rightly call it. And in fact, if we look back over not very many years in our society, people were a lot smaller because there was a lot less of this non-food about.
Exactly.
And it was less normal to just order a pizza or get a delivery.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, also we ate seasonally, didn't we, years ago? We actually had what was in season and local to us. So you haven't got all the additives and the preservatives and God knows what. Yeah, it's a thing for definite. So you know, I know that you as you say, you, of course, the mindset has to change. You know, diets alone don't work. I mean, let's just talk about diets for a moment. And I know you go through this in the book, and you talk about, you've got some interesting statistics on the fact that when people lose weight through a diet, typically most of that will go back on.
Well, that's an interesting statistic that I heard so many times. I think the statistic is something like 95% of people who lose weight through restrictive diets put the weight back on eventually, which I kept hearing that when I was bigger. And I almost used that as an excuse to not bother to lose the weight. Because if you keep being told, well, most people who lose weight put it all back on, you're much less likely to bother to lose it. Or you feel that the odds are so stacked against you that, you know, that that's just how it is and you've got to put up with your weight forever. But I did some digging, not very hard digging. It was quite easy to find that that statistic is actually not true. So I think it was exposed by an American magazine, and they basically found that that had come from a study in the 1950s from about 20 people. And they put about 20 people on a restrictive diet and really cut down what they ate. Of course, they lost weight. And of course, when they went back to eating what they normally ate, they put the weight back on, because that's how that would work. But I do think that there's two issues to that. One, that was a tiny study. So the fact that everybody still quotes this statistic is silly. And two, the key word there really is restrictive diets. So yes, if you massively restrict what you eat for any period of time, you will probably lose weight. If you then go back to what you were eating before, you will of course go back to how you were before.
Yeah.
So you have to find this happy medium whereby what your change is a sustainable change.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, I'm going to eat cabbage soup for the next 6 months. I'm sure if I ate cabbage soup for 6 months, I'd probably lose a lot of weight, you know, but it would not be sustainable for any length of time. And as soon as I started going back to eating what I used to eat, like lots of curries with rice and a naan bread and poppadoms and a pudding, you know, if I went back to that, of course I'm going to put the weight back on afterwards.
Yeah.
So you have to change your eating habits for good, really, and find something that works for you, that's new, that you're not going to have to give up because it's so awful.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's your view of counting calories?
So I've counted calories. I think it can help. For some people, maybe they don't want to do it. It's not a way they want to live their life. For other people, it can be a good way, at least until you've learned the calorie value of foods, to understand what you're eating. And so, you know, I'm all for it if that's what helps people. In the book, I don't prescribe a way to eat. Or sorry, I do talk about how to eat, but not necessarily what to eat. So I think it's pretty much accepted wisdom that to lose weight, we do have to have a calorie deficit. But there are different ways you can build a diet that works for you.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, as you're saying in the book, I mean, willpower alone doesn't work, right? Whether you're exactly the same when you're ditching the booze, you know, relying on willpower will not work, because as humans we seek pleasure and we don't want to feel deprived, right? So just share a little bit more about you know what you talk about there in the book.
Right, so let's take chocolate as an example. If you think chocolate is utterly amazing, it's going to be really hard to do without it. It's similar to, you know, if you think alcohol or cigarettes are utterly amazing, it's really, really hard to do without them. And that's why willpower is a really tough thing, because you need a lot of willpower to fight yourself. If your brain thinks, I want the thing's amazing, you need so much willpower to not go and do the thing, whatever the thing is. But if you can shift your mindset so that you understand that certainly cigarettes, certainly alcohol, and probably also chocolate aren't that amazing. They're not that good for you. They don't give you anything particularly useful. And that if you believe and shift your mindset so that you know you can happily live without them, then living without them becomes easy. And I don't really believe in willpower for giving things up. I think you have to shift your mindset so that you don't want the thing anymore. And that's
and so that life, you realize that life is so much better without it, right?
Yes. Yeah. So you're enjoying not having it. So you're embracing the lack of the thing rather than trying really hard to deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what I really like about your approach here, and what I've really found to be true over the years as I've worked with clients, is you do meet people who do manage to lose weight through whatever diet they've been on, and they're still really miserable, and they still don't love themselves at all, and actually the mindset hasn't changed, and that's actually really sad, you know. So I think, you know, this it can work a bunch of different ways, but ultimately, just like when people are ditching the booze, you can remove whatever these triggers are for you, but ultimately it comes back to what was the root of it all to start with. this piece about being, whether you're worth it or not, and it's really fascinating. I mean, certainly for me, you know, working with people who have stopped drinking, they're often able to get over this massive thing, you know, the hardest thing probably they'll ever do, only to find that the next addiction is there, and that's a food addiction or sugar addiction. Often it's sugar, of course. People typically do get the sugar head on the minute they stop drinking. They get the sugar head on, and then, you know, then they've got a new thing to beat themselves up about. Okay, you know, so all right, so I was drinking and that was terrible for me. Oh my God, look at me now. I'm, you know, on family packs of Kit Kats and Haribos and whatever the hell it is. It's something else to beat themselves up for, right? So I think, you know, your approach is exactly what's needed, because it's recognizing that none of this stuff is going to be sustainable unless we create the right mindset, right? But as you say in the book, it's not as simple as just going, oh, okay, then, all right, then, from tomorrow, I'll love myself. Hey ho, all good. Because we've had this ingrained in us for years, years and years and years of limiting beliefs and crap being piled in that tells us we are not enough. So what's step one if we want to try and do this? Where do we start?
So for me, it was thinking about my whys.
Yeah.
So why am I trying to make a change?
Yeah.
If you think about weight loss, it can be quite superficial. It's like, well, I'm overweight, I want to not be overweight, that's my why, I want to lose weight. But that isn't a why. That isn't why you want to lose weight. And, you know, for me, the why I wanted to lose weight was things that were quite personal to me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to wake up every morning feeling that regret that I felt every morning. I wake up, oh, I'm still really big. Oh, I've done this to myself. Oh, I failed somehow. Regretting it. I didn't want to, you know, not feel good about myself. I wanted to have a sense of pride. But these are all negatives. These are all like things I didn't want anymore, rather than things I did want. And the things I wanted actually were to be able to feel that I was showing up for my daughter and for myself with that sense of pride, feeling, you know, that sounds cliche, like living my best life.
Yeah, absolutely.
But at least not living my worst crappy version of my life. Mm. You know? I wanted to feel proud. I wanted to feel attractive, because, you know, when I was younger, I thought I used to be attractive. And then in my 30s, which is the time of our lives, we're meant to feel really happy and attractive and all this great stuff. I wasn't. I was not really rocking it at all in that department. So I wanted to get that back, you know, and to feel confident and to be able to go and get things that I wanted in my life and not feel, oh, well, I can't do it because I'm carrying this weight and that's just, you know, something negative about me or whatever. And I wanted to be brave and be there for my daughter as well, you know, which is part, I think, that mothers find. But now, you know, my daughter's now seven, you know, now it's an ongoing journey for me. I'm still working on my sense of self-love and self-esteem, and that's through the book, but also through other things that I'm doing and in my changing career. And I'm doing those things because I'm just learning to treat myself right, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's exactly the same approach that I would, you know, recommend for someone stopping drinking. You do need to know why. You know, why do you want this? And you're absolutely right. Most people start by just sort of repeating the negatives. Well, I want it because I think my partner will leave me if I don't stop, or I want it because I don't want to wake up feeling terrible. And it's all the things you don't want. And you have to kind of turn it around and say, well, what is it you do want? Well, what are you looking forward to when you are free from this trap? You know, exactly the same with the weight. And then the other interesting question that I always throw in, and I'm sure it's the same with this work, is, you know, well, what's stopping you then? What are the reasons why you don't actually want it, if you see what I mean? It's that reverse psychology piece, because actually, when you actually really start to dig deep, often there is some fear involved, and people realize, certainly with the booze, they realize, well, actually, if I do stop, I'm going to have to face up to certain things. And I'm sure it's the same with weight. Weight is a funny one, because it's, you know, the words are important, aren't they? And it's that, yeah, that weight, that's what we're carrying. It's almost like a protection that some people have. And I don't even know if we always know it consciously, but we're carrying this extra layer of protection.
That's right. And I absolutely felt that. And as my clothes got bigger, I got smaller, and I had to keep buying smaller things. I felt smaller, because I was physically smaller. I struggled with that in the early days of being, you know, a healthy weight. I didn't really recognize myself. My brain hadn't really caught up. I still thought I was physically bigger. Mm. But also then when my brain did catch up, I felt physically vulnerable.
Yes.
I felt small and somehow naked without being able to, I wouldn't say hide behind, but probably there was an element of hiding behind the weight.
And big loose clothing and all of the stuff you do when you're trying to cover up. Yeah.
Yeah. And I found myself standing there, you know, in a size 12 dress that fitted, and feeling uncomfortable like that to begin with. It wasn't like, oh, I lost weight and I suddenly felt all sexy and glamorous. It was like I had to get used to this new body.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the easiest thing. I think I'm there now. I'm happy with this. And, you know, there's this link, of course, with all of this conversation to body positivity, which
is
a different issue. It's a sort of, they're related, but it's a side issue. And certainly I think it's great for people to have body positivity, whatever their body shape or size. For me, I wasn't positive about my body when I was bigger. I'm learning to be positive about my body now, but I don't think that body positivity and self-love are necessarily the same. Like, you could love yourself or not love yourself, big or small. I don't think there's a direct link. You shouldn't only, you know, the body positivity movement is about helping people who are bigger to feel positive. That's great. That wasn't something that was going to work for me ever, because I wanted to lose weight.
Mm. Yeah. So, I mean, if you have to kind of sum up, you know, in a couple of sentences, then what is the link between losing weight and loving yourself?
So for me, it's not that I lost weight and then I love myself. That's not right.
No.
That's like basically saying you can only love yourself if you're thin, which is nonsense. But I had to love myself as I was on the day I decided that I wanted to make a change.
Yeah.
And I had to say to myself, okay, I accept you, I love you, but I want to create a different life for you. And now I'm going to show up for you every day and make this happen. Mm. And it's not really about the body or what you look like or a number on the scale. It was about me showing up for me to create a change for myself.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, it's I mean, I've seen it happen so many times. I've seen people go to a family constellations workshop, you know, and the issue they're presenting with is that they're obese, and through looking at something that's in their family dynamic from generations before, you know, I saw them 4 months later and they had lost all the weight and changed nothing, literally changed nothing. But I mean, of course they had changed something, but they certainly hadn't noticed that they had. It was purely the mindset, you know. So I really do get this completely. So what's next for you? So the book is out, Love Yourself, Lose Weight. I'm guessing you feel like the benefits for you are huge, because if, you know, not least, you're now a fantastic role model, you know, for your child that, you know, she's going to grow up being able to see that you can love yourself. How amazing is that?
Yeah, I want to share this message with more people. And I know, you know, having learned more about self-love and who else is out there talking about it, I'm heartened that it's a thing, and that it's a big thing that's snowballing, I think, at the moment. And I love that. I love, you know, walking into a shop and there's a self-love club t-shirt, or I love myself t-shirt. It's like, okay, this is getting into people's consciousness now. People are going to have to think a bit more about this, and that's really good. So I'm currently, you know, launching the book, trying to tell as many people as I can about it. I'll be doing some talks and some events soon over coming months. And then I'm, you know, interested in developing my career as an author, because I really enjoyed writing about this topic. And I'll probably write something, another book that's just about self-love, and I might write another book about weight loss, because what strikes me about this space is that, you know, if you're looking for help, the help is often very, very prescriptive. And I like the idea of helping to guide people find their own path through these problems. And certainly with weight, it's all incredibly prescriptive. It's like, do this diet, do these exercises, and voila, this will be your body. And it's like, that never works. And so I think if people could build their own weight loss plan, that would be hugely beneficial. So I'm really intrigued by this, and how, you know, we can use books and coaching and podcasts and all these wonderful digital tools that we have out available to us to help the message of self-love and putting yourself first and understanding your whys and showing up for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just going to pick up on just a couple of the little activities in the book. I like the fact that you suggest that we eat happy foods. What do you mean by that?
So yes, foods that make us happy, but not foods that make us sad. And we have to understand that some of the foods that we might think make us happy actually make us sad. Mm. So I used to eat, you know, I'd have a big pizza with lots of cheese, or I'd have a curry with rice and naan breads and poppadoms. And actually I think it would make me happy, but I'd know as I was overeating it when my tummy really hurt, but I was
just
still
feel stuffed. Yeah.
I felt stuffed, and it made me sad. And I knew that I was making myself bigger.
Yeah.
And that was sad. So foods that make me happy are either a bit of curry, or curry with cauliflower rice, or a salad, or a little bit of rice and a salad and a tiny bit of naan bread, but not a whole one, right? That would make me happy. So would a chocolate bar once a week, maybe in moderation, or a bit of a pudding, but not the whole thing all the time. If you know that that's going to make you be overweight or put on weight or whatever it is. And then I really like the idea of, you know, cooking things for yourself, making it fresh and clean and organic if you want, but it doesn't have to be. Eating happily doesn't have to be expensive either. It doesn't have to be something that's really exclusive, whereas junk food is seen as cheap. It's not about that. It's about food that you give to the person you love most in the world. So if you're not quite there yet on a self-love journey, you know, as I wasn't, you opt to eat lots of stuff that isn't very good for you. If you're there, you know, if your self-love has increased, often you'll think, well, I don't want to do that to myself. I want to eat something better quality, that tastes better, that looks nice. I want to make it look beautiful on the plate. Also, I like this idea of really enjoying beautiful food, because we eat, some of us 3 times a day, some of us 6 times a day. I eat lots of little meals rather than bigger ones to keep, you know, to maintain my weight. We're eating nearly all the time, right? We eat so much, so often, and it's a chance to reinforce the self-love piece. So if you can get into affirmations and reminding yourself about what you're doing, you have 3 or 6 chances a day to kind of reinforce that message. So eating with love would be, you know, making sure your food looks happy, makes you happy, looks good, and then using that time as a reminder of like, oh, okay, I'm treating myself well. I love myself. I'm awesome. You know, I'm showing up for myself.
Mm. Yeah, I know you've got lots of suggestions for affirmations and creating your vision and, yeah, a whole bunch of activities here. And also the importance of sort of sharing your own story, you know, documenting your story, as it were, and staying accountable, because I think that's really important too, isn't it? I think if you just, exactly the same as when people are ditching the booze, I think if you just isolate yourself, keep all this to yourself, actually it's really nice to share your success and have someone pat you on the back. It's one of the most amazing things in the sober club. It doesn't even have to be about ditching the booze. It might be that you do something else and people completely support that success. And there's something really special about, and we don't do it enough as adults, we don't actually celebrate our own successes or share them you know, with other people so that they can celebrate with us.
Yeah, I think sometimes we fear that our friends might think we're being a bit, you know, standoffish if we're the one saying, I'm done with that now, I'm going to do I'm not going to come for a curry with you, or whatever it is. It's like, well, why not? Is that not good enough for you anymore, kind of thing? And so, you know, we have to face that fear. But often, you know, I actually went for lunch today with a group of lady friends and talked about my book for the first time with that group of people. And they were so supportive and so lovely, of course. But I don't know why I would be ever afraid to do that. But we are, because I think, you know, our friends could be our worst critics. But actually, they're probably our biggest supporters.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if they're real friends. Anyway, Katie, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to us. I wish you every success with the book. Katie Lipps, Love Yourself and Lose Weight, The Success Story of Self-Love. Is there a website you'd like me to point people to?
Yeah, sure. So the website is just www.loveyourselfandloseweight.com. It does what it says on the tin.
Excellent. Thank you, Katie. I really appreciate it. Look forward to chatting to you about the next one.
Brilliant. Thanks, Janie.
Thank you, Katie. Don't forget then, if you want more conversations around how you can support your personal development, how you can, you know, well, love yourself more, basically. That's it in a nutshell, isn't it? How you can have a bit more acceptance in your life, then do check out thesoberclub.com and feel free to message me if you've got any questions. You know where to find me on social media, of course, and just at Janie Lee Grace pretty much everywhere. And you know where our events are, if that's something that's possible for you. Whatever you're doing, whatever stage you're at, always reach out. If you want to join a different group, join a different group. It doesn't matter which route you take to this, but it really matters that you know, that more people are able to get through the early stages when it can feel really, really tough. And the absolute best way of doing that is by getting the support you need and the encouragement. And, you know, if you're going through that phase where you're not sleeping well and everything feels chaotic, just know that we've been there. We've absolutely been there. Most of us, you know, not many people sail through the first few weeks and you know, feel amazing. It takes a little bit of time, but it's so worth it. I think you've heard me say that a few times before. So what else have I got to share with you? If you know of anyone who you think would be an amazing guest for the podcast, Just please let me know if you can introduce me, help me make contact, even better. There's a few people that I would absolutely love to get on the podcast. So, you know, I'm putting the feelers out. We'll see. You know, it'll happen if it's meant to be, right? But thank you again. I don't think I've said this for ages. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. And those of you who drop me a message every now and then and tell me what it means to you. I really do appreciate that. It makes all the difference in the world. And if you haven't already, go on to whatever platform you listen on and just give me a review, five stars, please. That would be amazing. Thank you so much. And I will see you same time next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.